Strange Stories UK here again. This is the Constant Martin, Mark Gordon podcast 3. I've done an additional podcast because the case has become so intriguing, and I'm posting this today at the beginning of week 7 of the trial. I've got no idea how the jury are going to all agree on a verdict. There's a possibility of no verdict being reached, a mistrial. Anyhow, the following podcast is posted in the expectation that anyone listening will have heard the previous podcasts or have some knowledge of the case. So, last Monday, week 6, started with the defence beginning to present their case. Mark Gordon was expected to take the witness stand on Monday morning. The court had been told that he would be giving evidence, so the court had penciled in 2 days for him to give his evidence and be cross-examined. It was thus something of a surprise to those in court to learn that Gordon had changed his mind, which caused the court to be adjourned until Wednesday the 6th of March, when expert witnesses had been called to support Gordon's evidence. If you can recall, when Mark Gordon was arrested, he was at first refusing to speak to the police, arguing that he was placing his trust in the British jury system and he would tell them, and only them, his story when the time came. It seems likely that Gordon would have been advised by his defence counsel not to give evidence, as they feared he would be caught out during cross-examination. It may be that Gordon was just trying to be difficult and game-playing, which he is capable of, and wanting to waste a couple of days of court time. The court case was supposed to be finishing on Friday the 8th of March. This clearly was not going to happen now, and a jury member who was assured that the case would be finished by this date was excused any further part, so he could go on holiday. Judge Lucraft told the jury that this was Gordon's chance to put his story to the trial, to the court, and that the jury may draw any inferences that may appear proper from his failure to give evidence as a witness. So it seemed that the judge was annoyed. The judge explained to the jury that due to the nature of the case, they couldn't just leave Gordon's case and go on to hear Constant Martin's evidence because they are being tried separately. So his defence was to go first and then hers. Therefore, his witnesses need to give their and finish their evidence before her defence start their case. Anyway, the expert witnesses were called for Wednesday by the defence. They were both medical experts. There is a body of opinion that think expert witnesses are viewed with some suspicion by the legal profession. As these were defence witnesses, though, there was going to be interest in what they had to say, as they were in some respects, putting their reputations at risk of ridicule by saying that it was presumably acceptable, or at least not fatal, to expose a small baby to the conditions faced by baby Victoria. But as Constant Martin was later argue, that there are babies in refugee camps living in difficult conditions, and these survive. Anyhow, Dr. Anavarapu was a consultant paediatric pathologist. He was there to decide when baby Victoria was born. He's a histopathologist who studies organs, tissue, cells and genetics to help prove a diagnosis. He seemed to be there to prove a negative by saying that the birth date of Victoria was unascertainable. He said that once decomposition was advanced, you can't date it, and it was not possible to distinguish between 1, 2 or 3 weeks. Dr. Anavarapu did try to make some guesses when the baby was born, but these estimations were shown to be useless during cross-examination. A placenta expert for the prosecution had previously said that there's no way to assess the age of placentas based on scientific evidence. Dr. Anavarapu was really saying the same thing. So instead of calling these expert witnesses for both sides, the testimonies could have been included on known facts or agreed facts between the prosecution and the defence. It seemed that the defence wanted to show that baby Victoria was born as early as possible. Constance claimed that Victoria was born late on the 24th of December and that she was born in a holiday cottage that was booked from the 20th of December. The booking was for 6 nights. It should be noted that the cottage was left in a very poor condition, and amongst the rubbish that was left behind there were no soiled nappies or evidence of birth. Constance Martin was claiming that baby Victoria died during the night of the 8th and 9th of January 2023, so she was only camping for one night on the South Downs on a January night. According to Constance Martin, baby Victoria was tragically and accidentally killed in a co-sleeping accident, so the defence wanted to know that Victoria was born on the 24th of December and died on January the 8th. So they were claiming that Victoria had lived for 15 days. The prosecution wanted to show that Victoria was born later, possibly as late as the first days of 2023. This would mean that she did not die until at least January the 13th to the 16th, 2023. This is assuming the same two-week age of the baby that Constance and Gordon had used. This would mean that she was out on the downs for more than a week. Dr. Rafiq was the other defence expert witness, and he also proved not to be particularly helpful to understanding what actually happened. Dr. Rafiq was at the court to try to help explain how and when baby Victoria died. He said that due to the decomposition of the baby's body, it was not possible to determine the time of death, and the cause of death was unascertainable. But possible causes were hypothermia or co-sleeping. Dr. Rafiq did give a sociological explanation of how and why patients from Africa and Asian backgrounds are more likely to engage in co-sleeping with their children compared to parents in Northern Europe. Dr. Rafiq also confirmed that the pregnant woman is not legally obliged to register with the NHS unless there are concerns over her mental capacity. Whatever that means. Again, information that could have caused the case to be suspended for 2 days that we've been waiting for, these could have been included in agreed facts. So we reached the point in the trial on the 7th of March, the Wednesday, when Constance Martin was to give her evidence. She was sworn in just after midday. Constance told the court that she had done nothing to harm her baby, telling the court that baby Victoria had accidentally been killed and found dead on January the 9th. She said she was shocked and felt intense grief. The defence then led her through a series of questions explaining her relationship with her children, Mark Gordon, and her family. This was over the next couple of days of the trial. They were trying to make a timeline of events up to February 2023. The questions concentrated on the following: Constance Martin's relationship with her family after she'd taken up with Mark Gordon, Constance Martin and Mark Gordon's rationale for camping on the downs with their baby, why they went on the run when their car caught fire in January the 5th, 2023, and the effects on the couple when they discovered their baby daughter had died. Constance Martin's relations with her family were fraught, and there had been huge falling out in 2013, when Constance would have been 25 years of age. I've tried to make some sense of the family feud. Constance Martin made references to a childhood traumatic event against one of her family members. This could relate to almost anything, so I'm not trying to deconstruct that. Martin also talked about her children being abused in care. It's not known if they were being looked after by her family at the time. Constance just makes reference to abuse by a foster family causing the children to be moved out. There was no evidence presented regarding this. Constance said that there was bad feeling over the sale of her grandmother's estate. The grandmother seemed to be the anchor of the family, and she would have wanted the estate to stay in the family. Constance said her will was gotten rid of, in her words, and they used a letter of wishes to sell Critchell House estate, which Constance said was against her grandmother's wishes. Constance says that she started protesting against this decision, which caused family rifts. Constance claims that she had private detectives hired by two members of her family to trial her and look for reasons to try to discredit her. There does seem to be an issue with the trust fund and the inheritance. Well, actually two trust funds, as in court it was stated that the amounts from two different funds were paid into Constance's account. So Constance was the oldest child. She had three brothers. But being female, it seemed to rule her out of inheriting as the oldest child. Instead, it was Max Martin, her brother, who inherited the estate. so it seems possible that it was Max she fell out with in 2013, as he intended and did sell most of the estate. The law of royal succession was being discussed in Parliament at this time, when the oldest male becomes monarch. The law was changed so succession is now gender neutral. Don't know when they changed this, I think 2011 or 12 or something. But it's assumed that this must have caused some comment in the Martin household. Napier Martin, Constance's father, had elder sisters, but it was he who had inherited the Crichildown estate. Although this would have been before any law change. It would be understandable Constance being angry at being passed over as a female, especially as the estate came from a female ancestor, her grandmother, Mary Ann Martin, who was an only child. Her son Napier was the only male of five children. Napier had some midlife crisis and did not want to run the estate anymore, passing it on to his son Max. Possibly it was thought that Max was a safe pair of hands in the family. Constance had a reputation of being a wild child. She had come under the influence of a cult in Nigeria. It was possible that private detectives had been put on to Constance to seek out other information, as she seemed capable of being a possible target for manipulation. Maybe it was thought that she was capable of giving the estate away for what she considered a just cause. Max Martin obviously profited from these circumstances and may have been a willing instigator into becoming the heir to the estate at Constance's expense. Where there's family money and wills involved, there can be intense disputes. It seems that Constance felt that she was not being treated equally as her brothers in the financial rewards of the estate, and it seems that there was some manipulation. When she was expecting her first child, she was cut off from receiving anything from the family trust funds. It's not known who the trustees of these funds were or are, and if they've recently changed. However, Constance complained and her payments increased substantially, up to about £2,000 a month. It is possible that the trust fund wanted to put restrictions on her trust, Constance's trust, in order to preserve her inheritance and make sure it was not whittled away, depleted in various ways, which ultimately would not have been to her benefit, especially if they thought that an older male may have been taking advantage of it. It will be interesting if the defence calls anybody up from the trust fund to explain their rationale. Constance said that that her three younger brothers had houses purchased for them by the trust fund. She felt she was treated differently because she had not agreed, because the family had not agreed with her relationship with Mark Gordon. And although there had been arrangements being made to buy her a house, this did not come to anything because she was with Mark Gordon. Maybe Constance had fallen out with her father, but this seems much less likely as he does not appear as a material obsessed person. He is something of a maverick personality, like his daughter. They were estranged, Constance Martin, her father, but he was the only one of the family to reach out to her when she was on the run. He shares some of her beliefs. He's anti-vax, and he believes in various conspiracy theories, which seem to be similar views expressed by Constance. However, it was said to be Constance's father, Napier, who in 2019 applied for wardship of Constance and Gordon's first two children. This after the accusations of domestic violence. It seems to have been the reason that Mark Gordon's passport was being held, so he could not take the children abroad. When the third child was born in 2020, emergency protection order was sought by social workers to put her children into care. It's a puzzle that no details were given for the social services a decision. There was a case of domestic violence, and as a child, Mark Gordon had been convicted of sexual offences. And of course, there were housing problems. But these do not seem to justify the actions taken by social services of taking away all of Constance Martin's children. So one wonders if there were other reasons. Of course, it might have been that Constance's father was genuinely concerned for the children. The domestic violence episode was when Constance supposedly fell from a window. Social services investigated and ruled that it was a case of domestic violence by Mark Gordon on Constance Martin. Constance Martin explained her views on the social services in court. She thought that the social services were working with her family, and she did not trust their reports, and she would not visit social services unless there was a CCTV recording events. This does seem rather conspiratorial and throws doubt on other ideas and claims she made, although perhaps social services were not very accepting of her, and as a consequence has had some bias towards her. Constance was not compliant, and her views on bringing up children in tents being normal in other parts of the world, such as igloos and Mongolia, would not have helped her cause. I think it's fair to say that Constance could have been difficult. The claim about Constance abandoning her child as claimed by the social services seems a bit far-fetched and should have been handled better. If Constance refused a COVID test, she should have been put into a room by herself with her baby, as what would have happened if she had contracted COVID. This being an example of an admittedly overrun social services being as awkward with her as she was with them. Constance did tell the court her fears over getting her four children back after the baby Victoria died. This didn't seem to make sense, as all the other children had presumably been adopted, or they were up for adoption, or at least in a children's home, and there wouldn't be any chance of Constance getting her children back once that decision had been made. Surely she would have realised this unless there was something that had not come out in court. Another surprising aspect of this case being that there has not been much input from social services to explain why decisions have been reached, possibly because the children's court is so secretive. Constance Martin said that her family were bigoted. This was implied to mean racist over her relationship with Mark Gordon. But it doesn't seem that the Martin family were racist, especially as Constance's brother, Max Martin, married a black woman, Ruth Aymer, and had her brother as his best man at the wedding. They married in 2019. The wedding featured in a Vogue magazine, at a time when Constance was estranged from her family. Interestingly, Napier Martin, Max's father, does not appear in the family wedding photographs. But it should be said that Ruth comes from a wealthy family, and she runs a high-end London jeweller's, whose pricing policy seems to start in the thousands and always ends up with a 95p. Strange. What is possible, indeed likely, is that the family were not happy about Mark Gordon's background, and it seems that private investigators were investigating Gordon's past, and the family were very unhappy with what they discovered. Constance claimed that she was estranged from her family before she met Gordon. The family would have had concerns about Constance's previous history, and they would have been worried that she was being exploited, which could be a reason why they used the trust fund to try to exert some control over her. Mark Gordon did not come from a wealthy family. His parents were part of the Windrush movement from the Caribbean. After his family moved to the USA, he was locked up for 20 years for sexual offences before being deported back to the UK where he'd been born. So it's hardly surprising that the Martin family were concerned over Constance's choice of the father to her children. It was possible that private detectives that they employed found other worrying intelligence on Mark Gordon. Constance made a number of statements in court. She explained why she had given a false name in 2017 when she had her first child. She said she was on the run from her family, who she was describing as oppressive and bigoted, and would not allow her to have children with the partner she had chosen, and they wanted to erase the children from the family line. Private detectives hired by the family were from two companies mentioned by Constance Martin. That's the Blackstone Consultancy and London Consulting Limited, who apparently hired ex-policemen and special forces. That's why Constance said that they had 34 burner phones in their car, which caught fire. The investigators were able to track their movements, so Constance said they'd had to remove the phone batteries to prevent them being tracked. They had to be careful when they drew money, as the investigators had ways and means of obtaining information on them. It is quite possible that Constance Martin and Mark Gordon were being paranoid, but I think questions should be asked during the court case about the alleged private eye surveillance and other interferences. Surely somebody from the Martin family should be called to give their side of the story, unless of course they're all hostile witnesses, and if that is the case then perhaps there more credence should be given to Constance's claims. If her claims are not challenged, then it's only fair that Constance and Mark Gordon were on the run from the family. There are so many odd elements about this case. A wall of silence from the family, who I suppose do not want family matters talked about in public. But the case is on at Court 5 of the Old Bailey, so it's getting massive exposure. I've not talked about other claims made by Constance about their cars being sabotaged and hints that their cars burst into flames and broke down for no reason, perhaps as many as 14 cars. It could be implied that there were attempts to kill them, although I find this unlikely, because if this was the intention to kill them by professionals, one would have expected greater success. The case is going to be massively difficult for the jury to come to a conclusion. They're already one juror down, so the remaining jurors will continue with 11, and for a majority verdict, 10 jurors will have to agree, assuming that the judge is willing to accept a majority verdict. It's just as well that there's such an able judge in charge, as any misstep will result in an appeal. How are the jurors going to decide between Constance Martin's paranoia and her family's controlling or sinister behaviour? I would not criticise the prosecution barristers, they're probably amongst the best available. However, the prosecution has gone huge on the fact that the baby was carried in a shopping bag for life, and to date in the trial there's been no evidence to back this up, whilst baby Victoria was alive. That is, the prosecution was saying that baby Victoria, as a live baby, was carried in the shopping bag for life. The prosecution's case seemed to be an examination of the social services records, and Martin and Gordon being on the run after their car caught fire. Then a few experts saying that sleeping with a baby in a tent in winter is not recommended. I'm not sure that that is enough for a conviction. I also think that if Constance Martin had stayed in a house and the baby had died while co-sleeping, sudden infant death syndrome, as has happened to so many people so many times over the years, that this case would not have come to court. Anyhow, the trial on Friday carried on with Constance Martin telling how they would take the bus from New Haven to Brighton in January 2023 after Victoria had died. These coastal route buses have CCTV, but no doubt this no longer exists. Victoria's body was carried in a shopping bag for life then, covered in soil and later other objects to try to disguise the fact that there was soil in the bag. Constance and Mark Gordon would eat on the beach of Brighton, and they bought hats, sunglasses and scarves in an attempt to disguise themselves. They thought that they were going to be recognised at any time. That's when they decided to switch campsites to Stanley Park in Brighton, where there must have been other people camping, given it's Brighton. They stayed there for about 5 days before moving on to Wild Park near Hollingbury Golf Course. By this time, Constance said that they were too weak to carry the bag around with them and left it in a shed on nearby allotments. Gordon had an infected foot and was very thin. They were scavenging for food in cafe bins. During the prosecution's evidence, it seemed quite sure that the couple had stayed at Seaford in the early weeks of the trial, but Constance said that this was not the case. So, I'm posting this just before the start of week 7 of the trial at the Old Bailey. I expect to post the final podcast on the case at the end of the trial, as there doesn't seem much time to go now. So we'll see what's happening this week, and possibly I will be posting again next week the final episode of this Constance Martin, Mark Gordon story. So I'd like to thank Damselfly for providing the background music. I'd like to thank you for listening, and until next time, I'll say goodbye.